today we've gotten a little break in the Arctic cold, although it is coming back. Meteorologist Lauren Rainson from WMBD WYZZ says we have light snow through noon, and then temperatures are going to fall this afternoon. So the double digits we're in right now are going to go back to single digits this afternoon, and the wind chill is going to go back to the I don't want to talk about it levels. Tonight we're going to have an overnight low of -5, so with a wind chill we could be back down to 21 below. And the same for Thursday, a high of 7, but the wind chill's in the negative 20-something area. There is an opportunity to wash the car on Sunday if you can get out in between the rain and snow. It could be as high as 36 on Sunday. And for us here in Illinois, that means we're going to put on the shorts and run around outside and say, gee, how warm it is. Right now it's 19 above with a non-really effective wind chill in the singular digits, but at least above zero. Have we gotten a report from John Rudy there, Chris, as to how warm it is in Florida? I know he's bragging a bit.
Yeah, he's suffering with the, I think it's, it actually did get down to the 40s, I think, and talking about some frost warnings down there.
No.
And,
only 50 degrees warmer than here. Right,
right. Yeah, we would be in shorts if we were down there after what we've dealt with few days.
We have Kevin Kingston and Chris Rudy of Kingston Wealth Management. Happy holidays. Was it a good New Year celebration
morning.
For you, Kevin?
How are you this morning?
Very good. Happy to be here and happy to have an electric heater right behind my butt.
Isn't that the truth?
It's cold outside. But you got out for New Year's a little bit, had a celebration? Or were you more of an at-home
kind
guy?
Kind of a before New Year's celebration. We had family here all week, which was a good thing, so we celebrated a lot.
The older I get, the earlier the celebrations happen. I'm pretty much a 9 years type girl on New Year's. About 9 o'clock, let's do a countdown and pretend it's midnight somewhere.
Good idea,
Chris. Good Christmas.
Yeah, very good. Good Christmas. Got to see a lot of our family that was out of the Champaign area that came back to see us, and then did the friends thing on New Year's Eve, and we weren't out too late either. We even made it home before midnight. So
I was driving home after midnight, between midnight and 12:30, because we had a large celebration that I was hosting at the Doubletree, and it was a delightful party. And I was out on the roadways with no one else. I was very, concerned. I want to drive safely, and I'm not intoxicated. I want to make sure that this happens. There was nobody on my path from the Doubletree out to my house on the far west side. It was like an apocalyptic moment. I was like, is anybody home?
The roads have been that way the last few days, really. I was commenting to Chris, just amazing how quiet the community's been.
It is. The cold keeps people inside more than the snow. We get a foot of snow, and everybody's still driving around. Like, it's not a big deal, but it gets cold, we're staying home. The kids are still off school, too. So I think a lot of kids are inside catching up on those new video games they got for Christmas.
Well, the temperatures are down and the markets are up.
This is
not
absolutely
a bad combination.
True. Tell us all about it, because this is our first get-together in 2018. We've missed each other for 3 weeks now. What's going on in the money world that we need to talk about today?
Chris, really strong 2017. You want to comment about markets and returns? And
yeah, I think we've all enjoyed what a good year in the markets could be. And while we say we never know when they're coming, it's nice to actually get to experience one. If you really look back over the last 10 years, you've seen pretty much everything that the stock market can do, good, bad, or indifferent. So it's nice to have those really strong positive years in there. I mean, talking about, upwards of 19% on the S&P, 25% on the Dow.
Those are the end of the year
totals? End of the year numbers.
Wow.
29, almost 29% on the NASDAQ, which, when you look back, tech was really the biggest leader that we saw all year long. But even internationally, we're, upwards of 23-25% on some of the international indexes. So it was a year where even if you had, and hopefully you did have, a nice diversified portfolio, you got a lot of good exposure in all areas. So it's a strong year. It's one we say, hey, it's there. It may not see that again for quite some time, but you never know. And hopefully, when we talk with people, if you've got a long-term outlook, a long-term plan, you need years like this to kind of boost that long-term average, because even though we plan for a certain withdrawal rate, or maybe over a long term, what a rate of return you could get would be, we never know the route that it's going to take to get there. But certainly, looking back, 2017, really strong.
So now that we've had these great boon years, what do we do to hold on to that money, Kevin? Because now that I've seen the money go up, 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 I don't want it to go down again. I want to keep it.
As Chris said, stay diversified, rebalance, not a bad idea to think about doing that if you haven't already.
Now, is this the month?
And you're here today, by the way, for new records. No.
Wait, what? I missed a new record?
S&P record.
Do I have to do
NASDAQ
the dance?
NASDAQ record.
We're at 2705.
Right.
Up 10 for the day, so that is an all-time record. Oh, my goodness. No, was there a motivator specifically for that?
You know, we've talked maybe over the last several weeks and months, Chris, about corporate earnings have continued to be strong. I think a lot of this tax cut was passed. There's just a lot of bright spots in the economy. I think we're going to touch on a few things. Chris, if you want to go ahead.
I think obviously the one thing that maybe we haven't focused on since we haven't been able to be with you and your listeners for the last couple of weeks is we have gotten some finalization of the tax plan. And obviously that was kind of the thing that we were hoping for all as kind of the last quarter of the year progressed. Got some more clarity about that. And I think for a lot of people out there, it's going to be a benefit. I think for some people, it may be a kind of a wash, depending on what your income or home ownership status is, mm-hmm. and or where you live, versus for state and local deductions. But I think the markets in general like it, as Kevin pointed out, that corporate tax rate permanently decreasing to about 21% is going to be, I think, a big thing, and we're starting to see it play out. There's a lot of different companies that have said, hey, we're going to one-time bonus our part-time and full-time employees somewhere between $2,500 and $1,000.
Is that where the airlines are suddenly giving out $1,000 to their employees?
Well, that's what they say. They say that we're going to do these one-time bonuses to our workforce, and we're going to commit to X amount of, you know, infrastructure or money back in our company that hopefully leads to more jobs. So whether or not they're a little bit self-motivated to try to promote that, or if they really, you know, are getting in line with hopefully what the main stated goal of this tax plan was, is to contribute more for all of our workers. And, you know, I think we've seen wages start to come up this year. It's been a long time coming for many people. We've seen the unemployment rate decrease to the lowest in almost 17 years. And really we see, Kevin, sometimes hopefully the wages have usually come quicker with this recovery, right. But it's been a little bit slow, but starting to see that come up a little bit as well.
That corporate tax rate, I'll just add, Susan, that Chris just mentioned, going from 35% down to 21% is huge. And by the way, that tax rate does not sunset. A lot of the individual tax provisions that go into effect sunset in 2025. The corporate tax rate does not. So unless Congress changes that, which they could, that'll continue beyond 2025.
I don't think we've done a show together in the last 4 years where you haven't actually mentioned how much we needed this corporate tax cut, which finally happened. So I know you've got to be thrilled to see it. My question to you is, was it enough? Is 21% enough to make us competitive?
I think so. That makes us very competitive around the world. You'll see perhaps $2 trillion or more come back in the U.S. from U.S. companies that will be repatriated. It's hard to tell how that'll affect things internationally at this point, but it'll be very favorable in the U.S., and I think it's clearly will be a jolt to our economy.
And the markets had been rising from the moment that we started talking about these prospective tax cuts. A lot of these corporations were kind of, you know, hedging on the fact that it was going to happen. Now that it has, will we see continued jumps in the market, or have they already kind of built this in?
Well, I mean, I think you're even seeing it play out to even just the first couple of days of the year where there was a little bit of concern that maybe the last business day of the year on the 29th, we saw kind of the last hour everybody was, you know, selling or the markets were going down. And I've had a number of people ask me about that. And really, I think that's simply explainable to every one of these active managers, hedge fund managers, institutional money managers out there wants to make sure they lock in a certain profit for the year. So, you know, they just say, hey, it's been a great year. Let's take a little bit off. Let's lock in our returns for the year. And you saw back on Tuesday, I guess it was, first day markets were open, back to buying again. Kevin just pointed out we saw some new intraday highs this morning. And I think a lot of that is tax driven, along with you know, we're seeing a lot of other positive factors out there in the markets.
So I got to predict and celebrate when the Dow hit, gosh, we started doing this on the show, what when it would hit 19,000, when it hit 18,000. Now here we are at 24,800. What could we see possibly with the Dow or the S&P in 2018? Should we make
Chris
any predictions?
Chris loves to predict markets, right, Chris?
Yeah. I mean,
I'm saying that tongue-in-cheek. It's just very hard to predict.
It is hard to predict. But, I mean, could we see a year where we hit, I'll throw it out there, to like a 27,000 year? Or is that just way overshooting the opportunity?
Well, I mean, that would be somewhere in the realm of 10 to 15% return. Mm-hmm. So it'd be half of almost just a little bit more than half of what we did last year. So
it sounds logical that it could happen.
It's statistically possible. But again, I think what we try to stress, Kevin, is that it's really not that important, especially for individual people, for folks that hopefully we're trying to get you to have a more than a 12-month time perspective. So while it is entirely possible, again, it's entirely possible it could go the other way based on who knows what could happen. But we know over time the overwhelming trend, and I really think you've seen even coming off of 2008, you know, we've almost quadrupled where we were at that point in the market, which were – you know, we're seeing some of these gains faster and stronger than we have before. I know there's a lot of indicators out there of, you know, folks say, well, again, is it too high to get in? Well, you could have asked that question every year for the last 7 years. And if you didn't get in, then when? And the train has really just been kind of going up and up. We've seen some incremental declines. We've seen, you know, a lot of disturbing things over the last 7 years that could have caused a panic. And I think, Kevin, I commented to you, I don't know if we're getting, if it's a good thing or bad thing, but I think folks are getting a little bit more resilient, a little less reactive to some extent from some of these, you know, what would maybe 5 to 10 years ago have caused a pretty large long panic in the market, maybe now is confined to just a day or things like that.
Well, and you look at the 80s and 90s, which many of us had experience with, and markets were so robust. Then you go into 2000 to 2010, you had a very flat market for 10 years, some real downturns in there due to the tech bubble, the credit crisis, and so it causes you to pause. That's understandable, but Chris is really focusing on what's important. It's that long-term outlook. You know, how long are you going to have money invested? If it's 1 or 2 years, then it probably shouldn't be mostly in equities. If it's 10, 20, 30 years, and then that's the case for equity exposure, diversification. Don't jump in and out of equities. It just doesn't work. And over time, those averages will work in your favor.
Again, we're talking with Kevin Kingston and Chris Rudy from Kingston Wealth Management. They talk to us every Wednesday from 10 to 11 here on WJBC as we go over not only what's in the markets right now, some terminology, lessons, and instructions. Always good advice on things you need to know to plan your retirement appropriately, or at least learn why you need a financial advisor to help you plan your retirement appropriately. Still to come in our show, we're going to talk about things to consider if you plan to retire before age 60. Some people are ready to do that. Also, required minimum distributions. We've talked about that on the show. We'll talk about appropriate timing. I want to ask questions about the oil markets and if this is going to be another year of the giant merger. When I look back on 2017, I think of all the giant mergers that were either projected, predicted, or in some cases rejected.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another couple of them on the horizon. Do you think this is going to be another year of the merger? We'll talk after this in WJBC.
Central Illinois. WJBC.com.
All right, it's 10:23. It is Kevin Kingston and Chris Rudy from Kingston Wealth Management. You can find them online at kingstonwealthmanagement.net for all the details about your retirement planning and why you can't afford to not get some professional advice when the rules change every single day. Now, I read the business pages, thanks to you two, and John Rudy, who's enjoying listening to us on the WGBC app down in Florida right now as he's working from the remote office. But I enjoy reading the business pages now more than ever because of the two of you. And I noticed there were so many big mergers in 2016, a little bit, but more in 2017. Now with these companies seeing, all right, we've got a better tax plan for 2018 and 2019, and we've got to take this money we've had sitting on the sidelines for so long. Do you think this is going to be another year of mergers? Apple buying Netflix?
Very well could be, Susan. When you have low interest rates and companies are flush with cash, that has a tendency, you see more merger, acquisition, consolidation when that's the case. But, you know, it's hard to predict who those companies might be. You're definitely seeing some discussion that may happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think that will there be as much as it was last year? Hard to say. I think last year was, if we probably went back and ran the numbers, it was probably an above average year for at least high profile mergers. I think that there's quite a few that probably go on that many folks aren't aware of. But as you point out, we do see some pretty high profile names that, you know, we use on a daily basis. And I think,
and some monetary numbers that are just so astronomical.
Well, yeah, and I think that those are really the kind of the eye grabbers, the attention getters when you talk about, you know, a $1 billion corporation purchasing or acquiring or merging with another. It gets to be pretty big.
That usually works out, though, to the investor's advantage when that happens, right?
It can. Yeah, certainly. It certainly can over time. You know, I think they would argue that it would actually work to the consumer's advantage. I know when we were kind of discussing off-air, CVS and
Humana
and that proposed or pathway going down, it's essentially they're trying to control the chain all the way from your doctor's office to your end result at the CVS at when you pick up a prescription. And if they can control the chain at every point along the way, I guess, if you will, they claim they can do it more efficiently and hopefully a little bit less expensive. But the big fear I think some people have is now we've got everybody, it's the same company all the way through that's
right,
controlling this, that, you know, they may say they're going to be a little more lenient with the price, but they've got control over everything. So where they build in, you know, various margins, or they're not going to be hurt by it, I'll put it that way. But, yeah, I think the lower interest rates, and, you know, I think we've seen the Fed increase their rates here over the course of last year. It was about three times last year. It's supposed to be on pace for three more times this year and two in 2019, with the end goal being somewhere between 2.75 and 3. And, for example, right now we're, after the last raise in December, just up to about 1.25, the range between 1.25 and 1.5, which seems very low, and it still is. But considering we were at zero for a number of years, it is, we have seen the Fed take steps, haven't we, Kevin?
Yeah, and the Fed will release their most recent meeting minutes today. Those will be released so that the markets will be looking to see if that sheds any light on rate hikes, when and how many. But as Chris says, the markets are anticipating. The Fed's been good about kind of projecting what they plan to do and staying with it, and markets like that. So as Chris said, they've indicated maybe three rate hikes in 2018. The key to that, the markets will be looking to see when that occurs. But if the Fed continues to go slow like they did last year, that's a very favorable way to see rate hikes.
And if you didn't do the refi before, I would suggest getting that done as soon as possible, because now when you're looking at the rates, you're at 4% and up for anything 30-year. Mm-hmm. You might be at 3.5% for a 15-year. I know you refinanced, Chris, this year. I refinanced the year before. And as we see those market rates jump, sometimes the mortgage rates will do a little tick up at the same time.
Yeah, they tend to follow. And even, I think, we've mentioned before, too, those interest rates on credit cards will be the ones that I think you'll see the most sizable jumps in with the given increases in the Fed. So, you know, if you're at 15-16% now, probably not out of the realm to see that, you know, creep back up into the upper teens, if not the 20s, depending on obviously everybody's credit's individual, so you know that could be a good resolution for the year to make sure that you're checking your credit. It's not a bad thing to do. I know that's been kind of a myth that's been dispelled about you should know about what's on your credit history, because it goes a long way to really helping you finance a lot of those major purchases that that folks see in their life. So that could be something if we're talking about resolutions for 2018. And then credit, monitoring after we've seen all the hacks and breaches and cybersecurity. So there's a lot of your information that's probably out there, and it's always good to kind of take that step to protect yourself.
Before we go to news, tell me what I need to know about oil. Is the price going to stay approximately where it's at, which has been reasonable, or are we expecting an uptick anytime soon?
It's creeped up. Crude oil is about $61 a barrel today, and with the additional U.S. production, Chris, you could see that kind of stabilize. I don't see any reason to think it's going to skyrocket from here, but we've just seen that gradual creep in oil prices.
Yeah, it was such a big drop off from when we were talking about $100 a barrel oil, close to $4 a gallon gas, and we've kind of been in this new normal for a while that, in that $40 to $50 a barrel range. So when you start to see it creep up, we've seen it parlay into some little higher gas prices, but still for the most part pretty affordable, and just again that supply is still out there, but I think you're starting to see some demand creep back in as well.
Let's take a break for headlines. Kevin Kingston, Chris Rudy are with us all hour from Kingston Wealth Management every Wednesday 10 to 11. We'll talk more about plans to retire before age 60. Somebody's going to have the money to do it. What do they need to know? We'll talk next here on WJBC.
News at the top.
JBC weather forecast provided by WMBD WYZZ meteorologist Lauren Rainson. We've had a little bit of snow this morning. Nothing major for accumulations or causing road delays. The temperatures are going to fall, though, by this afternoon. We've had a nice little warm spell of 20 above, and it's going to drop to the single digits by this afternoon and into the negative territory on the overnight. Our overnight low expected to be negative 5, high of only 7 on Thursday, with sunny skies and the wind chills tonight and tomorrow, 21 below. On Friday, morning flurries and a high of 8 above. We're at, again, 19 with Kevin Kingston and Chris Rudy from Kingston Wealth Management live in the WJBC studios. Our first meeting of 2018 when all the news is happy, happy, joy, joy. Welcome back, gentlemen. If someone has done really well, either with your own advice or they're a savant of numbers, retiring before age 60 could happen.
Yeah, it's very possible. And even if maybe you haven't done quite as well, could be some, unfortunately, there is the other side of that coin is by choice or by chance. You may find your company, something happens with your company, they're shifting to maybe a different workforce, and you could find yourself, maybe you weren't planning to retire at 60, but you don't want to go and start a second career. So, again, there's the good way to retire at 60, and then there's other ways if you feel like maybe you're kind of forced into that retirement that, Kevin, we've kind of compiled a little bit of a list here of things to really consider, because I know you and I, we meet with a lot of people who want to be retired when they're 60, but sometimes there's things that maybe they're not aware of, or that you don't overlook. And one of those is that for a lot of those IRS, 401k, IRA types of accounts, they really want you to wait until you're at least age 60, kind of 59 and a half, right?
We talk about, Chris, you definitely want to avoid that penalty of 10%. So if I'm under 59 and a half and I want to pull money out of IRA, I'm going to get hit with not only ordinary income tax, but that 10% penalty, which, Chris, you and I believe people should avoid at all costs, unless they're just well-heeled financially otherwise. And even then, it's just a bad idea.
Yeah, I think as we see people, especially if you talk about retiring, in your, early 60s, you're going to be looking at potentially three decades of retirement there. So if you can avoid tapping into those savings funds that you've accumulated while you were working, especially in a significant way early on, the I think the better likelihood of a positive retirement outcome that you'll have. But there is. But there is.
I was going to comment, Chris. Translating that into dollars sometimes is helpful, Susan. So if somebody's pulling $1,000 out of an IRA before 59.5, ordinary income tax may be 20% to 30% of that, plus a 10% penalty. All of a sudden, you might have 30-40%. So $300 or $400 out of $1,000 disappears in taxes pretty quickly.
But there is one way, Kevin, that, you know, if you have no other really options, you kind of find yourself, I need to start taking money. It's called Rule 72T. It's a way that folks before that age, 59.5, you can't avoid the income taxes on it. That's always going to be subject to income tax. But the one way there to maybe potentially avoid that 10% penalty, maybe take a minute and just kind of describe how that process works.
As you know, Chris, it's referred to as substantially equal periodic payments. So you set up a distribution. I believe it has to be at least 5 years that is paid over. So once you start that, you're kind of locked in. Those payments have to be completed. But it's a way to remove some money from the 401k IRA without the penalty.
Yeah, and the one other thing I would add to that is that, and it's sometimes overlooked, it's not only the 5 years, but then you have to attain age 59.5. So if you start doing this at, say, age 50, that 5 years, it's 5 years or 59.5, whichever is longer. So you could be doing this for quite some time, and you have to stick with it exactly as prescribed, or else that penalty can creep in.
So I'm still a little lost. I'm going to do then required distributions over that time. So I'm not going in for just a one-time pullout, which does give me the penalty. But if I'm taking consistent
equal
reductions
payments.
And equal payments, can I choose what the equal payments are?
Nope. There's actually it's a good question. There's a formula that they will factor in based on what your account balance is, what age you are when you want to start taking it. Essentially, it's close to what you have to take out as your required minimum distribution, which for most people doesn't kick in until they're age 70.5. So this is essentially accelerating that process, but then you're committed to it for a period of 5 years or until you reach age 59.5, whichever is longer. So it's not something that we would always recommend at all,
Kevin,
if avoidable.
Kevin, help me understand what scenario might this apply to. What would be my scenario? I'm retiring early because
you were terminated unexpectedly,
okay,
or you chose to retire early, and you have no other resources to support yourself, perhaps.
Maybe I'm injured or I'm sick?
Yeah, correct.
That would then
qualify? And you just really need those dollars. Or other circumstances where it just makes some sense. But usually it's more of a, I need those dollars, so how can I take it without getting the penalty?
Okay.
Still taxable. The tax doesn't go away. But you just avoid the 10% penalty.
I want to get a 72T distribution, who do I need to talk to before I do it?
Well, preferably a financial advisor like Chris or Mike or somebody you work with who understands understands the rules and kind of the nuances of how that can be taken. But also, Chris, talk about how that applies to an employer retirement plan. That's a slightly different. Can you address that just a...
Yeah, when you do it through the employer-sponsored plan, there's one other provision in there that deals with if you're age 55. So we're kind of coming back, scaling back from 59.5 to age 55. If you leave or separate from service after you've turned 55, there may be a provision in there where you can access your funds. So say you haven't rolled it over into an IRA, but you kept it in a 401k, that you may have access. And now, again, it's one of those things, like Kevin pointed out, always double check before you start making these moves, because once you start going down this road, it's kind of hard to put it back in the box. And another person we're talking about, who would you discuss this with, is your tax preparer, so that they make sure that they account for it appropriately. Because if it's not recorded as part of a substantially equal payment, there could be some red flags there. Could be a potential audit in there if you don't account for it the right way. So, again, it's we're kind of getting into some of the nuanced things. But when you talk about retiring, relatively early, age 60 or earlier, you really need to know what your options are and understand that it's kind of difficult to do if you don't have other outside funds built up.
But going back to your employer-sponsored account, if your employer-sponsored account is all of a sudden your only funding for a retirement you were expecting to take at 60 or 62, and your company announces, nope, you're retiring at 55, mm-hmm. is that part of their severance package benefit that you could be able to access those funds without penalty? Is that something they have the ability to do?
Well, that's more of a law right now that's okay. on the books that deal with all retirement plans. So it would be very difficult, in at least from what I understand, it would be very difficult for them to say, no, you can't do that, especially if you're separated from service at or age 55 or older. So that's really more of a protection that you have under the law.
Okay, good to know. Let's take a short break and we'll come back and we'll talk more about required minimum distributions, because this is a year, time of the year that conversation is important. Kevin Kingston, Chris Rudy from Kingston Wealth Management, they're always available for you to contact and make your new financial advisors. But if you want to go in, that first visit's free to find out if they are what you need. Learn more about them at KingstonWealthManagement.net.
Alexa, enable the
All right, this hour of the program sponsored in part by our friends at Dell. Need help finding the right Dell PC with Intel Core processors for your business? Call 1-877-BY-DELL to talk to a Dell Small Business Tech Advisor. 20 outside, going to be in the single digits by this afternoon. So if you were going to try and get something done while it wasn't Arctic cold, go grocery shopping, put gas in the car. I'm not ready to wash the car in this temperature just yet, although I really want to because it's thick with the salt. Now is your moment of zen in between all of these Arctic cold temperatures to get those things done. Here in the warm studio, we have Kevin Kingston and Chris Rudy from Kingston Wealth Management. We're talking about things you need to know about required minimum distributions. And is that something that we need to know in January, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something that's probably timely because maybe at the end of last week you were finishing up, maybe taking some of those required distributions. And really what we get asked a lot, Kevin, is there really a good time to take that distribution? Is there a certain time when maybe you have to, or that works best for somebody's plan? I personally think as long as you're complying with the rule, which is find out what year you turn 70 and a half, the very next year, by April 1st of the next year, you have to take that first one. Then it gets a lot easier to remember. You have to take out so much before the end of each year.
It'll be easy to remember that I'm a May baby because I will be 70 and a half, like December. And so I'll have
well,
from December
November,
to April.
I think.
November, May. Okay, maybe it is November. But then you have
but
until
then you have April 1st of the following
April
year.
April 1st of the following year. So it'll be close to my birthday.
Right, exactly.
Got to get it done by my birthday.
And really what I kind of try to share with everybody is that really just depends. If you need that money for supplemental income, we know January 1st each year what you're going to have to take out by the end of that year. If it's helpful, you can take it out in 12 equal payments and just kind of consider it a little additional supplemental income. For some people who, hey, I don't need to take that money, I don't really want to take it out, but the government makes me, well, maybe we keep it invested longer all year long and then take it out, which has been more traditional, towards the end of the year. And there's even some other things you can do with that, Kevin, after you take the money out, even if you don't need it, potentially reinvest it.
Yeah, where can I put it?
Well, we see in practice, as Chris said, we see clients who really want that as income, just take a monthly distribution, treat it as other income. Others who don't usually delay it, you know, take it later is maybe better than sooner. But then also, you know, I think a good strategy, many times people don't realize that RMD, required minimum distribution, may start in the 4% of your account mm-hmm. range. So if you have $100,000, 4% of $100,000 has to come out.
$4,000. I can do that math.
But then by the time you're in your mid-80s, that distribution requirement's about 15%. So a good strategy, if you don't need those dollars for current spending, consumption, reinvest it in a taxable account and try to regrow it. So you have to take the money out, take the $4,000 out, pay the tax, reinvest it in another similar investment account and try to regrow.
If this is making your head hurt, again, there are people that can hold your hands from, while doing this, from Kingston Wealth Management. And if you ever need to get in touch, your first appointment is free, 663-9477. All right, the new 2018 tax laws, is there any changes that's going to make now that they have approved what they're going to do in Washington? Chris Rudy, is there anything that we need to change in our daily activities because of these new tax laws?
Well, I think we'll get the exact specifics maybe here closer towards the end of this month, but everything that I've read looks like that you may see some different withholding from your paycheck starting in February because they've changed
those
tax brackets. So maybe now you hopefully fall into a little bit lower tax bracket so you can maybe take home a little bit more. Not a bad idea to consider, hey, if I've been used to having so much withheld, I can live on it, may create an opportunity to put a little bit more into a 401k. You've already learned to live without it. Maybe you can kind of help yourself save a little bit more. From a non-income perspective, so as Kevin just pointed out, the non-IRAs, the non-401ks, the things, the regular investment accounts, we really didn't see a lot of change as far as what's taxed on capital gains. So there's really not a lot of decisions from an investment perspective there that you would need to make. I think the big thing is the elimination of the state and local deductions, or having it capped at $10,000 for folks in high-income states are gonna feel that for sure.
Everybody that tried to pay their property taxes in advance found out that didn't do them any good.
The end result, though, Susan, almost across the board, there will be very few Americans that don't get a little bit of tax relief because of the personal exemption change, you know, offsetting some of that cap on state and local and property tax. So when you look at the details of the tax law, there will be very few Americans that don't get a tax break.
Just from what you've read so far in the tax changes, do you think it will encourage more entrepreneurial style businesses? Because I know Kingston Wealth Management is a big supporter of the entrepreneurial programs through Illinois State University and their School of Business. Do you think some of these things will be pro-business for the beginner?
Absolutely. I mean, that tax break that we were talking about on corporations, it doesn't matter whether you're big or small, that'll help small companies as well. You'll see small companies have more cash because they're paying less tax.
I'm trying to figure out how to become a business of broadcasting, you know, be Susan Saunders LLC.
Well,
point in time.
And I don't know if we're the best people to guide you there, but I'm sure that there's somebody out there that could. And there is the small business, the S corporation, LLC, what they call pass through entities, mm-hmm. folks that maybe run a business, but all the income hits their personal return. There are some provisions in the new tax law that that can help you maybe cap that some of that, a portion of that income at least, at a little bit lower rate than maybe normally what it would be subject to if it was all just treated as personal income. And I thought that was because you and I, Kevin, see a lot of small business owners who maybe fall into that category where, you know, they operate a company or a small business.
Landlords, I thought, were the most specific to fall into that category.
And there's a lot of specific provisions in there as far as, you know, what actually your profession is and mm-hmm. how much, if any, of that could be, you know, take advantage of that provision. But I thought, as a whole, I thought that was one of the more positive things as well.
Well, if you're paying tax on a pass-through at a personal rate of just, say, 35% for discussion, and now you can use a C corp, incorporate, and pay tax at 21%. You may see more pass through entities go back to the corporate tax rate.
Okay, now you lost me, but that's what we have accountants for, and that's why we take long term.
Well, just
meetings.
Quickly, pass throughs all hit in your personal tax return. With a C corp, you can really divide that tax
I blanked out the moment you said 35% tax rate. I just couldn't function anymore because that's so high. Thank you, Kevin Kingston, for all your knowledge this year and every year. Chris Reedy, always
so
nice
generous.
To see you.
Thank you.
You can tell your dad he can have as much fun as he wants to in Florida because you're always extremely welcome here. when he's not. He just doesn't let you come when he's here.
Right, exactly. I think he's afraid. I think he, when he sees me in action, he likes to keep arm's length.
My son can do math really fast. Thank you so much. We will see you next Wednesday here on WJBC. And again, KingstonWealthManagement.net. Call for your first appointment absolutely free, 663-9477. Securities offered through Valmark Securities, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Valmark Advisors, Inc., and SEC-registered investment advisor. Kingston Financial Group, Incorporated is a separate entity of Valmark Securities, Inc. and Valmark Advisors, Inc., and past performance does not guarantee future results.